Well, you'd be correct, but this time we're coming at you with something other than science. We're going to be utilizing Rachel's forensic science degree and my psych knowledge to bring you a podcast that will be both thrilling and chilling.
If you haven't guessed from the title, we're going to be talking about true crime. I absolutely love learning about different true crime cases and have a plethora of knowledge pent up in my brain about cases I've read about, listened to, and watched on TV. So we're going to be utilizing my forensic chemistry degree as well as CJ's psych knowledge. As a reminder, CJ doesn't know what the case is before recording the episodes, so it's a mystery for you and her. Let's open today's case file and see what's in store. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials. All right. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of True Crime with Millennials, where I tell my co-host CJ a crime story and I use my forensic chemistry degree to shed some light on it. And CJ uses their psychology knowledge to shed some light on it. And we also give a lot of opinions. So buckle up. Today we're having a major throwback episode. And it's also going to be a little bit of a history lesson. Today we're going all the way back to... my notes aren't working. Hold on. Failing me now.
She said she's going to try and bore me as much as possible in this episode, apparently.
I was kidding. But yeah, so we're going back to 1881. When I said big throwback, I meant big throwback. We're going to talk about the assassination of President Garfield.
Okay.
Who, like, often gets forgotten because he only was president for, like, 200 days before he was assassinated.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him. We just learned about him in the history class I was in.
So I'm going to do a little background on President Garfield, and then we'll get into his actual assassination. Assassination, because I know when I was looking into this case, I knew literally nothing about the man. So... He was the 20th president of the United States. His name is James Abram Garfield. He was elected in 18...
He's not the big orange cat that you're thinking of.
No, he's not the cat. The cat was never president. So he was, like I said, he was the 20th president. His full name is James Abram Garfield. Again, not the cat. Elected in 1881. After 9 terms in the House of Representatives, and he was only president for 200 days before he was assassinated. So everywhere I looked said he was the last of the log cabin presidents, and I was like, what the fuck does that mean? It literally just means the last president to be born in a log cabin. I was like, okay. So while he was president, he was known for attacking political corruption, and that was pretty much it, because he was only president for 200 days.
Less than a year.
Yeah, it's hard to make a large impact in that time. So, he was born November 19th, 1831, in Orange, Ohio, which is in Cuyahoga County. I probably did not pronounce that right. Alright, so he was born, obviously, as people are, to his parents, Abram Garfield and Eliza Abalu. His father, however, died when he was age 2, and his mother.
You're just trying to get back into the accent of those days.
His mother took on the full duty of running their farm, which the sources I looked at called impoverished. So apparently, they were poor as fuck, which is relatable. So he actually drove canal boat teams to make money for college, which he later talked about and said that he can't swim. And during this time, he fell into the canal about 16 times, and during this time also contracted malaria. So
he's having a great
that
time,
sucks.
Huh?
So, but he did earn enough money to go to college, and he started off at Western Reserve Eclectic Institute, which was renamed Hiram College later, because Western Reserve Eclectic Institute is kind of weird. But then he ended up moving on to Massachusetts, where he went to Williams College. He graduated from there in 1856, and then returned to the Reserve Eclectic Institute as a professor. One source said on classics, the other one said on ancient languages. So I guess he studied, like, classical literature in different languages. I'm not sure. So, yeah, he was a professor, and by the age of 25, he was promoted to be the college's president, which is pretty crazy. I'm 25 now, and I would not want to be a college president.
Yeah, I'm good.
That's insane. At 26, he married Lucretia Rudolph. I'm really good at pronouncing names today, guys. Killing it. They had 7 children, however, 2 of them died in infancy. He also studied law and was also an ordained minister in the Disciples of Christ Church. So, you know, he's doing a lot of things.
Yeah, he sounds like a busy guy. Yeah.
Very busy person. He was also he was an advocate of free soil principles and became a supporter of the newly organized Republican Party. He was elected to the Ohio Senate in 1859. During the secession crisis, he advocated for coercing the seceding states back into the Union. But then he also obviously joined the military during the Civil War. So during the Civil War, he helped recruit the 42nd Ohio Volunteer Infantry and became the colonel of it. He also had an affair with a woman named Lucia Calhoun, but he admitted this to his wife and she forgave him and they stayed together and everything. Not that she really had a lot of other options in 1862. I digress.
At least he told her, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, at least he told her and, like, they moved past it, but, like, it's not like she could have just been like, "You douche, yeah, like, I'm douches. Divorcing you." But anyway, so in 1862, there were very few Union military victories, and he led a brigade at the Battle of Shiloh in Middle Creek, Kentucky, and was successful, so he was pretty highly touted for that. At the age of 31, he became a brigadier general. And then at 33, he became a major general of volunteers. I have no idea what that means, but it sounds prestigious. I mean, I know general is pretty good.
Now he's major.
Instead of brigadier. And I don't know what the "of volunteers" means. He's only in charge of volunteer people, not people who have just been forced into it. I don't know. Anyway, in 1862, Ohioans... It literally
yep,
said
that's
that.
Ohio
Ohioans.
People. Sorry, Ohio anyway. People, if you're listening. I'm a Michigan person, so we're natural-born enemies.
But they elected him to Congress. At this point, President Lincoln was president, and he convinced him to resign his commission in the military to take his position in Congress. Lincoln said that it was easier to find major generals than obtaining effective Republicans. So, there you go. He won re-election for 18 years and became leading Republican in the House. He also became the chairman of the House Committee on Appropriations and became an expert on fiscal matters and advocated a high protective tariff. He was considered a radical Republican and sought for a firm positive policy of Reconstruction for the South. So then, this is kind of a weird story, I guess. At the 1880 Republican Convention, he was putting forth John Sherman for president, but he gave such a good speech that everybody accidentally voted
so
for him instead.
So this is kind of like a movie situation.
So that's how... that's how he ended up being the presidential Republican candidate that year. When you do so good repping somebody else that they choose you instead... You did so good, you failed. Good job, kiddo.
I mean, kind of, but also he got to be, like, president,
yeah.
So.
So he won the election by only 10,000 popular votes. His opponent was General Winfield Scotland. I can't read my own handwriting. Scott Hancock, that's what it says. So as president, he... like I said, didn't do a lot because 200 days, but he strengthened the federal authority over the New York Customs House, which was a stronghold of Senator Roscoe Conkling, and then he named Conkling's rival, William H. Robertson, to run the Customs House instead. So it was like this huge deal, and like Conkling was super mad, and to try to get him, because it was like a nomination, and so then they had to like approve it, and so Conkling was like, I'm just gonna resign, he won't replace me, he'll just beg for me to come back and change his mind, and they were like, nah, we're just gonna replace you, and they put two more dudes in. So he was pissed about that, but that actually has nothing to do with why he was assassinated.
So it's just a little side story?
Just a side story. He also invited all American republics to a conference in Washington in 1982, but that never took place because on July 2nd, 1881, in a Washington railroad station, he was shot. After he was shot, he lived for weeks afterward. Alexander Graham Bell even tried to locate the bullet that was inside of him with a induction balance electrical device, but was unsuccessful. And we'll talk a little bit more about his actual, like, wounds and stuff later. But on September 6th, he was taken to New Jersey to the seaside, and because he wanted to not be stuck in the White House dying. Then on September 19th, 1881, he died from infection and internal hemorrhage in Elberon, New Jersey. So now let's talk about the assassin a little bit. So his name is Charles J. Guiteau. It's a French name. It's G-U-I-T-E-A-U. The sources I looked, I saw said that he was 41 years old at the time and mentally unstable. He was a lawyer, and he stalked the president for months before shooting him at the Baltimore and Potomac Railroad Station on July 2nd, 1981.
That's who I want to be a lawyer, someone that's mentally unstable and stalking the president.
Right. When I, like, I'm about to go, like, in depth into, like, his whole thing and, like, why he did it, and you're gonna be like, how did nobody notice this? But anyway, so he passed the bar exam and started his own law firm in Chicago, but he never brought in much business other than bill collecting. He also got in trouble several times for pocketing the money that he collected, the bills that he collected. That's just a bad business strategy, my dude. During the 1880 election, he wrote a speech supporting Ulysses S. Grant as the Republican nominee. When Garfield got the Republican nomination instead, he just changed a couple of words in his speech and started giving his speech about Garfield to different places, like a small groups of people. I'm like, yeah. Real creative, bro. He also wasn't, like, on Garfield's campaign team or anything like that. Like, he just was, like, completely unaffiliated. I love how that he used literally the same speech and just changed a couple of words to make it refer to Garfield
of course,
instead.
Why not?
Like, really, bro? Like I said, he only ever gave it to, like, very small audiences. It's not like he was, like, in any way, like, had a large role in getting Garfield elected or anything like that. After Garfield won the election, he became convinced that he was responsible for Garfield's victory. He began pressing Garfield for an appointment as ambassador to Austria. He did not know Garfield at all. Like, not a thing. He wrote to Garfield and said, "Being about to marry a wealthy and accomplished heiress of this city, we think that together we might represent this nation with dignity and grace. On the principle of first come, first served, I have faith that you will give this application fair consideration. Since when do presidents pick who they want to be in positions of power by first come, first served rule?" Do you want to talk a little bit about, like, how maybe he has convinced himself that he is responsible for, like, Garfield's success and, like, he's owed something almost? And how that would play into, like, his mental state?
I mean, there could be a lot of things going on, but it kind of sounds like he's, like, I hate to use the word delusional, but, like, you know, delusional and not focusing on this reality, kind of, like, making up a narrative. It's narrative in his head of, like, what's going on and that he could have directly caused what was happening with someone he never met, but he's, like, obsessed with them.
Right. So you're going to get a lot of quotes from him in this story, so maybe you'll be able to gather some more insight about maybe what's going on in his brain a little bit. Also, this was all lies. He was not about to marry an heiress. He was on his last few dollars. Like, he was going nowhere. He then wrote again to Garfield and said, I'm paraphrasing now, but he basically said, just kidding. I think I'd like a position in Paris. I think that would suit me better. Like, you don't even know this man. Like, that'd be like me writing to Joe Biden and just being like, so when you appoint me to be like this position of power, like, I would like it to be, you know, in this specific country because I feel like that's a cool country. Like, anyway. So, he... obviously, none of his letters were answered because it was just some random dude writing the president-elect letters. He said it hurt him very badly. He then moved to Washington, where he stayed in hotels and then skipped to the next one without paying. He spent most days in Lafayette Park across from the White House, where he was already planning to kill the president. So his first idea was to kill the president with dynamite, but he was afraid that he would accidentally kill himself due to inexperience. He also didn't want to kill innocent bystanders. He said, and I quote, "That's too Russian, too barbarous. No, I wanted it done in an American manner." How do you kill someone in an American manner?
Probably with a gun.
Yeah, that's true. We do like our guns here, apparently.
Do we get to, like, why he, or, like, if he was, like, in love with him or anything?
we're getting there. Just hold on. He's okay. Got a lot of reasons, and I'm very unsure what's going on in his brain, so I'm hoping you can offer some insight, at least.
Yeah, I'm getting an idea.
But anyway, so, he said he considered stabbing, but decided that the president was too strong to approach with a knife. He said...
Also Secret Service?
So the Secret Service existed at this time. Like, Abraham Lincoln, it was his last act before he died. He signed them into, like, existence. But they didn't protect the president until, like, 1890-something, I think. I have it later in my notes. But his specific quote was, "Garfield would have crushed the life out of me with a single blow of his fist."
Okay, so he's idolizing them.
So he knew he would be caught, but he said, "Of course I would be executed, but what of that when I should become immortal and be talked of by all the generations to come?" So he obviously had no money, so he borrowed cash from a friend and spent $10, which at the time was a lot of money, on a short-barreled British Bulldog revolver because he thought that it would display well in an exhibit about the president's assassination. Alrighty then. And so he practiced firing it into a fence and decided that he was a better marksman than he had thought. He then returned to Lafayette Park and contemplated. So he was interviewed extensively after this. So all these quotes are, like, actually from him. He said, "My object in shooting Garfield, again, was not to make him suffer, but on the contrary, to save him from pain and unnecessary agony. I know that for the sake of harmony in the Republican Party, I had to kill him." So he continued to target practice during the day, cleaned his pistol by night, and kind of waited for any opportunity to get close to him, basically. On one Sunday morning, he was in the park across from the White House, and he watched the president on his way to church. He then ran home and got his pistol, which, if he was so dedicated to killing the president, I don't know why he didn't just have it with him in the first place. But
did he know he was going to be able to see him at that time?
Not really, but if you're, like, sitting there stalking somebody with the intent to kill them, wouldn't you at least want to have the gun with you? Like, by the time you go home and get it, what if he's gone? I don't know.
Yep.
So he went home and got the gun and got back to the church, but he determined he couldn't shoot him without endangering the lives of several of the worshippers near him, so he did not kill him on that day. or attempt to kill him on that day. Later that week, he saw that Garfield would be taking a train to Long Branch, New Jersey. He went to shoot Garfield, but backed down when he saw the First Lady. Later, he said, "She looked dreadfully sick and pale and weak, and her husband took her arm at the moment to support her. In an instant, I was completely overcome, and I said to myself, I cannot take that man's life now. No, the country must wait a while. If I shoot that man at this time, before his wife, it will kill her. She has just recovered from a long spell of sickness, and she does look so badly." Then again, he stopped, and he tried again, but stopped because Garfield's son was nearby him. Then, on July 1st, the president left the White House alone, and so he followed the president down to 15th Street, where he stopped by his Secretary of State's home, which was James G. Blaine. But again, he lost his nerve. He said, "Just at the moment, somebody would always get into the road." After that, convinced himself he would not fail again, and told himself, "Well, you are no good. Your president comes right to you to be shot, and you let your heart get in the road of your head and your hand. This will not do." So he then wrote a letter to the White House saying the death of the president was a sad necessity, and predicting the assassination would unite the Republican Party and save the Republic. He then wrote to General William T. Sherman, who was in charge of the army at the time, and said, "I have just shot the president. I'm going to the jail. Please order out your troops and take possession of the jail at once." This is where it gets, I mean, if it's not weird enough already, it gets a little weirder here. He then went and picked up a person that he calls my dearest friend on earth, but it really was just a recent paramour that he had met, named Pauline Smolens. And he told her, "You told me one day, not so long ago, to go out and do something that would make me famous. Just keep that in mind till you see it accomplished." He then, left. They went to, the train station together where they, parted ways. So at this time, the Secret Service did not guard presidents. They didn't guard the president until 1894. I believe it was, Grover Cleveland, maybe? There was, a threat on his life, and he declined their protection anyway, because people were against it. I don't know. Anyway, that's not the point of this story. So he told himself, "Immortality will shortly be yours. This is the hour of your doom." He then snuck up behind the president and shot him in the back. Garfield turned around and looked at him, and he claimed that the president recognized him as, quote, "the one he had slighted." He fired again.
I doubt that.
Yeah. This guy, the president did not even know this dude. He was just like, what is happening?
Exactly.
So he fired again and shot the president in the elbow. He went to fire again, but an officer wrestled the gun out of his hand, you know, as people do when somebody's shooting at the president.
Yeah.
The crazy thing about the gunshot that he suffered is if it had happened now, he easily would have survived with, a 2 to 3 day stay in the hospital. It shouldn't have been a fatal gunshot wound. At the time, doctors still weren't using aseptic technique at all, so they were, first of all, the bullet that was lodged in him didn't need to be removed. It was just lodged in soft tissue. It wasn't causing any harm. They should have just left it. But they were convinced that the bullet being inside of him was what was killing him, not the fact that they were sticking their unwashed hands into his abdomen to try to get the bullet out.
I mean, if anything, he would just get lead poisoning, right?
Potentially. I mean, if the bullet was even still made with lead.
I mean, they're still made with lead now. It's just the tip.
I don't know. There are definitely bullets that are not made with any lead at all, so it just depends. But, he ended up, dying of, massive infection, not because he was shot. If they had stopped putting their stupid grimy hands in him, he would have been okay. But anyway, so at the time, Joseph Lister, who's a British surgeon, was advocating for antiseptic technique, but Americans ridiculed him, saying, I quote, In order to successfully practice Mr. Lister's antiseptic method, it is necessary that we should believe, or act as if we believed, the atmosphere to be loaded with germs.
You know, I can't with that.
I was just like,
wash your hands.
Really, bro? Just gonna reach in and like feel around in someone's abdomen with like your dirty ass hands that you were just like riding a horse and like, ugh. Anyway.
At least wear some gloves.
And like at this point, people weren't even bathing like on the reg. Like, bro, you're the most germy motherfucker around and you're reaching into somebody's abdomen. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
So yeah, doctors continued to stick unwashed hands into him to try and find the bullet, which could have been left alone. So Buteau was obviously convicted of murder and hanged, but during his trial, his defense was, because he's a lawyer, so he defended himself, but his defense was, the doctors killed Garfield, I just shot him. Which, like, you know, he's not wrong.
True, but you still shot him.
But also, he, like, legally the thing is, if he hadn't been shot, this wouldn't have happened to him. So, like, that's not an effective legal defense, but, like, he's not wrong. But, yeah, so, like, what are your thoughts on this man and his shenanigans?
Hi, guys. It's CJ from True Crime with Millennials. If you are wanting to support us more than just listening, be sure to give us all the stars that you can on any platform. That really helps spread the word about our podcast, as well as checking us out on social media. You can find us on Instagram at True Crime with Millennials. We're also on Facebook, which is True Crime with Millennials. You can also go on Anchor and tip us, which would be great. It helps support the podcast for the future, and we will be introducing merch soon. So be looking forward to that. And yeah, make sure to share our podcast with friends and family as well. And don't forget about Science with Millennials. We have that podcast as well, and that comes out every Wednesday. This podcast comes out every Friday. Thanks for listening.
So like I said earlier,
he's delusional. We've kind of figured that out already. There's something that used to be called paranoid disorder, but it's now called delusional disorder. And it's considered a psychotic disorder. Basically, people who have it can't tell what's real from what is imagined. And then obviously from the name, you can tell that delusions would be the main symptom. Which, if you want to know what those are, they're unshakable beliefs in something that isn't true or based on reality. But that doesn't mean that they're completely unrealistic. They don't necessarily have to be bizarre, having to do with situations that occur in real life. Delusional disorder involves delusions that aren't bizarre, having to do with situations that could happen in real life, like being followed, poisoned, and deceived, conspired against, or loved from a distance. So the best way I can compare it to is like someone that is like, we've all experienced a little bit of paranoia at some point in our life, right?
I mean, I have anxiety, so like every day of my freaking life.
Okay, so it would be like to the extreme though, that you think someone is consistently following you, or like you might be poisoned and it generally involves like them mistaking what's going on, or like mistaking the experience. So then there's also things called a bizarre delusion. Is something that could never happen in real life, such as being cloned by aliens or having your thoughts broadcast on TV. People with delusional disorder often can...
Hey, I'm CJ, a millennial. You may know me from the podcast Signs with Millennials.
Continue to socialize and function normally apart from the subject of their delusion, and generally do not behave in an obvious or odd, bizarre manner. It's unlike other psychotic disorders, who might have delusions as symptoms of their disorder, but in some cases they may have that preoccupation with their delusions so that they are not able to live a quote-unquote normal life.
See, that's like one thing I was wondering about with this guy, because like he tried so many times to kill the president. Like, how did nobody notice this weird guy with a gun just hanging around following him?
Well, I'm sure he didn't have it, like, out in the open.
Well, he said even a couple times he actually, like, drew the gun and went to shoot him and then was like, oh no, his kid's here, or, like, whatever. And I'm like, how is everybody around this man's just so oblivious?
I don't know. I mean, like, was he just doing it out in the open, or...?
Apparently, I don't know. I'm just very, like, Because now, like, if somebody was stalking the president, like, openly for, like, a week, they'd be, like, all over that shit.
Yeah, but I guess it was the 1800s, so things were just getting started, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, what do you think about, like, does he... So I get, like, mixed signals from him, because he's, like, convinced that killing the president will, like, save the Republican Party somehow, or something like that. But then he also is, like, angry that he, like, slighted him. So are those two things, like, those two delusions or, like, perceived slights, like, are they working together, or are they, like, separate delusions, or...
I was kind of getting to that, because there's different types of... You're okay. But I do want to say that delusional disorder is rare, and it's mostly in mid to late life, and is slightly more common in women than in men. So, I mean, it's pretty equal to affecting women and men, but, you know, there's a slight difference in it. There are different types of delusions based on the main theme, which is why I was asking if he was, like, interested in the president in that way, because there's... erotomanic. It means that they're in love with them, like a person, and might try to contact that person if it's someone important or famous generally, and it can lead to stalking behavior. There's also jealous theme.
Does
which
that
is
have to be like
they...
a romantic in love with them, or like could just be like an idolizing kind of thing?
That's why I was kind of wondering, because like generally when it comes to delusional behaviors, it might be starting out as like they're obsessed with them and then think that they may have romantic feelings towards them, but it could be either way.
It's also like so hard to know, because I doubt at that time, like, if he was having romantic feelings for him, I doubt he would have admitted it, because it was like definitely not okay to be homosexual then.
Oh yeah.
And like even if he did admit it, like maybe, well no, the press probably would have reported it, because they would have loved to have a field day with that. But like I don't know, maybe he wasn't, like, being 100% truthful about that. I don't know.
Yeah. There's also somatic, which they believe they have a physical defect or medical problem. Obviously, that's not going on with him. This is kind of where I'm thinking that he falls, which is called grandiose. The person has an overinflated sense of worth, power, knowledge, or identity. They could also believe that they have a great talent or made an important discovery.
Yeah, I feel like that definitely sounds like him, because he's, like, he thinks... that he, you know, is the reason that this guy's president, and then now he's just ignoring him.
And then there's also, I'm going to say this wrong, I already know, persecutory.
Prosecutory?
Someone who... maybe. It says P-E-R-S-E-C-U-T-O-R-Y.
Oh, persecutory.
There you go. Persecutory. Someone who has this belief... that they or someone close to them are being mistreated, or that someone is spying on them or planning to harm them, they might make repeated complaints to legal authorities. So my thought was this, with this, is that because there's mixed delusional disorders as well. So my thought was that, and then if he is in love with them, we would go back to that romantic one, and the grandiose one, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. But, you know... he could also have a little bit of narcissistic personality disorder thrown in there. But it sounds like he's mostly just delusional, and I am still trying to rationalize why or how he was a lawyer.
So my question is, I was wondering about narcissistic stuff, because he talked a lot about how he wants to be, like, immortalized by killing him. So like, I guess that can also, like, play into, like, the grandiose, like, delusional disorder. Now that I'm thinking about it, but yeah, I don't know, like, there's just so many things. What do you think caused his, like, repeated hesitation? Because you'd think if he was, like, really having these delusions and, like, thought it was really the right thing to do to kill this person, he would have done it instead of try, like, over and over and over and continue to lose his nerve.
See, I was thinking about that too, but there's always been someone important by him, or someone that he considers to not be worth killing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he said, you know, the one time the president, like, left the White House by himself, went to visit the Secretary of State, and, like, came back, and he said, you know, like, oh, well, you know, there was never, like, people just would step out into the street at the wrong time. And I'm like, really? In all that time, there was not a single moment where there was not somebody else within, like, danger distance. Also, like, he claimed to be a decent shot, but, like...
I don't think he is, though.
That's the thing. People don't have to be that, like, far away to not be in harm's way if you're a decent shot. Like, well, if I mean, I guess it was... I guess weapons were a lot less accurate then, but precise. Still, like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I also think about, like, the shrapnel or whatever that would come off of it. That's why it doesn't lead me towards sociopath or psychopath, because he definitely has empathy for other people. Like, he doesn't want to hurt other people.
Right. But I just, like, to me, it just seems not like he's, I don't want to say, like, he's...
Trying to say that he's chickening out?
It just seems like maybe the delusion's not, like, consistent for him. Is that something that would happen? When you're, like, would you have moments of clarity where you're like, this is insane? Like, I'm gonna go home? Or, like, moments of doubt? Or is it like, no, this is, like, 100% the right thing to do?
I think it just depends on the person, honestly.
It's like, I don't know. I just have a lot of questions. And... this man is just sus.
I mean, honestly, I think he was just dealing with some mental health issues that went, you know, unresolved because of the lack of awareness of it back
because
then.
It was the 1800s, and they were still right. Digging grubby hands into people to try to find bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, like, I did like what he said at the... Well, so, also... I don't know, because if he was truly, like, delusional and having this, like, delusion that he, you know, was gonna become, like, immortalized because he was gonna kill this president and, like, unite the Republican Party or whatever, why would he at trial have then said, oh, well, I didn't kill him, the doctors did? You know, wouldn't he want that credit?
I don't think he would if he didn't actually kill him.
Well, I mean, he did still kill him. Like, if the president hadn't been shot, he wouldn't have died from infection because doctors are dumb. Or were dumb. I don't know, I'm gonna leave it at our dumb, because I've met some dumb doctors.
I mean, that could just be, yeah, you might be right, it might be breaking that delusion, but at the same time, it's like not following. It's kind of, I guess I could see it as breaking it if because it's not exactly how he imagined it going.
Is it possible that, and like, after he has, like, completed, like, the mission of his delusion or whatever, for the delusion to break and then him be like, oh, shit, I done fucked up?
I'm gonna say potentially. I don't know enough about it to make, like, a certain statement on it.
That's fair. I just have a lot of questions about it. But I do think that, like, legally, yes, he is responsible for the man's death, because if Garfield hadn't been shot, he wouldn't have died from infection. But I do agree with his statement that he didn't kill him, the doctors did.
Yeah.
Especially because, I mean, it's not even like there wasn't... Because, like, before people even knew about germs, like, okay, yeah, you know, like, you get a pass, you didn't know. But, like, there was literally a doctor at this time saying, like, hey, guys, we should potentially wash our frickin' hands before shoving them into people. And the American doctors were like, psh, that's dumb. But, anyway. I mean, I know every, like, great scientific discovery is psh, that's dumb by, like, the most of the community of, like, doctors and stuff. But... I don't know. Like, when they first were like, hey, the world's round, everybody was like, oh my god, put you in jail.
Right.
But.
It's also hard because it wasn't like there was medicine back then to, like, really help, which there is a lot now that could help.
Right.
Also, it still just grinds me that, like, back then they could have also ruled that people with epilepsy or OCD or Alzheimer's or other things like that could be considered delusional and need to be, like, locked up in a mental ward or sanitarium, whatever it's called. I just, you know, there are so many things that they just, like, lumped together and categorized like that.
anything was wrong with you, they were like, you're crazy. Congratulations. But yeah, I guess that's it for this episode of True Crime with Millennials. And we really appreciate you guys' support. So let us know what you think. Hit us up on Instagram or other social media, and we will see you guys next week. Bye.
Later, Tater. I think I've said that one already, but I don't care. It's one of my favorites.